हरिः ॐ सहनवावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 4, Confidential Reasons for Lord Chaitanya's Appearance. Okay, page 115. The natural love of the gopis is devoid of any trace of lust. It is faultless, bright, and pure, like molten gold. The gopis are the helpers, teachers, friends, wives, dear disciples, confidants, and serving maids of Lord Krishna. Quote, O Partha, I speak to you the truth. The gopis are my helpers, teachers, disciples, servants, friends, and consorts. I do not know what they are not to me. Footnote 52. This verse was spoken by Lord Krishna in the Gopi Premamrita. What is the Gopi Premamrita? Anyone? Yeah. Okay, sounds good though. But the gopis know Krishna's desires, and they know how to render perfect loving service for his enjoyment. They perform their service expertly for the satisfaction of their beloved. Right, so it means they're doing things nicely. So this idea is that if it's just mood and all that, then it doesn't matter. And all, no, they try to do it nicely because it's for Krishna. Then another quote. O Partha, the gopis know my greatness, my loving service, respect for me, and my mentality. Others cannot really know these. Footnote 53. This verse was spoken by Lord Krishna to Arjuna in the Adi Purana. Among the gopis, Srimati Radhika is the foremost. She surpasses all in beauty, in good qualities, in good fortune, and above all, in love. Just as Radha is dear to Lord Krishna, so her bathing place, Radha Kunda, is dear to him. She alone is his most beloved of all the gopis. Footnote 54. This verse is from the Padma Purana. O Partha, in all the three planetary systems, this earth is especially fortunate, for on earth is the town of Vrindavan, and there the gopis are especially glorious, become amongst them is my Srimati Radharani. 55. This verse spoken by Lord Krishna to Arjuna is cited from the Adi Purana. All the other gopis help increase the joy of Krishna's pastimes with Radharani. The gopis act as the instruments of their mutual enjoyment. Right? So Radha and Krishna, their mutual enjoyment, and the gopis act as instruments in supporting that. So that makes sense. Yes.
When we say that Krishna speaks to Arjuna in the Adi Purana, it be the same Arjuna?
Yes, it would be the same Arjuna. Mm-hmm. Like that. Same Arjuna. All these, it says O Partha, they're all of these ones seem to be from 52. Yeah, they're all from Gopi Premamrita and the Adi Purana. These are all and Padma Purana. These are all spoken to Arjuna. Because he's a confidential friend. Right? But in Dwarka, you know, he's not the same as there, right? Because that means I don't think he's speaking to the cowherd boy.
No, that's Partha. Arjuna.
Yeah. Yeah, because Partha has to be. Otherwise, he'd just say Arjuna. Like that. Srila Prabhupada. It is said that the gopis are divided into five groups, namely the Shakis, Nitya Shakis, Prana Shakis, Priya Shakis, and Parama Preshta Shakis. All these fair-complexioned associates of all these fair complexion associates of Srimati Radharani, the queen of Vrindavan Dham, are expert artists in evoking erotic sentiments in Krishna. The Parama Prashna Shakis are 8 in number, and in the ecstatic dealings of Radha and Krishna, they side sometimes with Krishna at other times with Radharani, just to create a situation in which it appears that they favor one against the other. This makes the exchange of mellows more palatable. Right? So the Parama Prashna Shakis, those are the Asta Shakis, like what are here with Radha Mara. Right, so depending on what it is, they play the size just to create, that they favor one over the other. Because if one is making a scene and you favor the other one, then it brings out more taste in that particular scene. And then at other times, then they'll side with, sometimes side with Radharani. And then that'll bring it out with Krishna. But otherwise, they'll side with Krishna and then make him feel this, and he'll do all kinds of things. Then when he gets done, he'll side back the other way like this. The point is, makes the exchange of mellows more palatable. So they know exactly how to do that to make the rasa increase. Right? Radha is the beloved consort of Krishna, and she is the wealth of his life. Without her, the gopis cannot give him pleasure. Right? As we mentioned before, that Radharani is explaining that her service to Krishna, how much she can please Krishna, is like Mount Meru. And all the other gopis are like mustard seeds. So you put together all the gopis and all that mustard seeds, and still it's not going to be anything comparable. Right? So when it's Radha and Krishna, they can increase the mellows that are there. Lord Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, left aside the other gopis during the rasa dance and took Srimati Radharani to his heart, for she is the helper of the Lord in realizing the essence of his desires. Verse 218-219. Srila Prabhupada. In this verse from the Govinda Lilamrita 3.1, Jayadev Goswami describes Sri Krishna's leaving the Rasa Lila to search for Srimati Radharani. That's interesting. Is that Gita Govinda is quoting Jayadev?
Jayadev wrote Gita Govinda.
Oh, I'm thinking Govinda Lilamrita. Okay, right. Yeah. I was thinking for a minute there. Okay. Yes. Okay. Verses 220 to 229. Summary of the basic meaning of verse 6. Lord Chaitanya appeared with the sentiment of Radha. He preached the Dharma of this age, the chanting of the holy name and pure love of God, in the mood of Srimati Radharani. He also fulfilled his own desires. This is the principal reason for his appearance. Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna, Vrajendra Kumar, the embodiment of rasas. He is amorous love personified. He made his appearance to taste that conjugal mellow and incidentally to broadcast all the rasas. Right, so he came to taste this conjugal and at the same time all the other rasas become glorified. Quote, my dear friends, just see how Sri Krishna is enjoying the season of spring. With the gopis embracing each of his limbs, he is like amorous love personified. With his transcendental pastimes, he enlivens all the gopis and the entire creation. With his soft bluish-black arms and legs, which resemble blue lotus flowers, he has created a festival for Cupid. Footnote 56. This verse is also a verse from Gita Govinda 1.11. Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya is the abode of rasa. He himself tasted the sweetness of rasa in endless ways. Thus he initiated the Dharma for the age of Kali. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya know all these truths. 220 to 226. Srila Prabhupada. Lord Chaitanya is Sri Krishna himself, the absolute enjoyer of the love of the gopis. He himself assumes the role of the gopis to taste this predominant happiness of transcendental mellows. He appeared in that role, but simultaneously he propagated the religious process for the age in a most fascinating way. Only the confidential devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can understand this transcendental secret. Advaitacharya, Lord Nityananda, Shivas Pandit, Garadhar Pandit, Srup Damodar, Murari Gupta, Haridas Thakur, and all the other devotees of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Bowing down with devotion, I hold their lotus feet on my head. Srila Prabhupada. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita teaches us that we must offer our respectful obeisances to all such pure, confidential devotees of Lord Chaitanya if we indeed want to know him in truth. Because they know him, because it says the devotees know him, so they know him. So the only way that we can appreciate is if we have to respect them, because they know. And then by their grace, then we may also, you know, have an understanding. Right, so we, yes. So Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, taking their blessings, he has written Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have given a hint of the sixth verse. Now please hear as I reveal the meaning of that original verse. Verses 230 to 277. Further meaning of verse 6. Desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appeared from the womb of Srimati Sachidevi as the moon appeared from the ocean. Verse 5 of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. All these conclusions are unfit to disclose in public. But if they are not disclosed, no one will understand them. Right? I mean, in other words, the general populace is not fit to understand these things because they have no interest. They're just total materialists. But at the same time, if they don't hear these things and understand these things, they won't get out of that and make an attempt to worship Radha and Krishna. Therefore, I shall mention them, revealing only their essence, so that loving devotees will understand them, but fools will not. Right, so the essence being given, because that's the part that always applies. Details is where people get distracted. Right? In the principle, that's not where there's distraction. Because it's either you, like you said, you understand them or you don't. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can you say that the hearing from the bona fide authority, that creates the qualification to understand this?
Yes, hearing from the qualified in that mood of surrender or that mood of service. Because just hearing because, you know, we're interested in to know things, that's not going to reveal. It's when we actually want to know and we're actually trying to appreciate. You know, even if we don't have really any qualification, but that becomes the qualification. Right? Probably. Anyone who has captured Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda Prabhu in his heart will become blissful by hearing all these transcendental conclusions. All these conclusions are like the newly grown twigs of a mango tree. They are always pleasing to the devotees, who in this way resemble cuckoo birds. Huh? Cuckoo? Oh, okay. Isn't also sometimes C double O, K double O? No, it's always this way. Okay. The camel-like non-devotees cannot enter into these topics. Therefore, there is special jubilation in my heart. For fear of them, I do not wish to speak. But if they do not understand, then what can be happier in all these three worlds? Therefore, after offering obeisances to the devotees, for their satisfaction, I shall speak without hesitating. Once Lord Krishna considered within his heart, quote, everyone says that I am complete bliss, full of all rasas. All the world derives pleasure from me. Is there anyone who can give me pleasure? One who has 100 times more qualities than me could give pleasure to my mind. One more qualified than me is impossible to find in the world. But in Radha alone, I feel the presence of one who can give me pleasure. Although my beauty defeats the beauty of 10 million cupids, although it is unequaled and unsurpassed, and although it gives pleasure to the three worlds, seeing Radharani gives pleasure to my eyes. The vibration of my transcendental flute attracts the three worlds, but my ears are enchanted by the sweet words of Srimati Radharani. Right, so again, it's always these contradictory elements. that bring out taste. Although my body lends fragrance to the entire creation, the scent of Radharani's limbs captivates my mind and heart. Although the entire creation is full of different tastes because of me, I am charmed by the nectarian taste of the lips of Srimati Radharani. And although my touch is cooler than 10 million moons, I am refreshed by the touch of Srimati Radhika. Thus, although I am the source of happiness for the entire world, the beauty and attributes of Sri Radhika are my life and soul. In this way, my affectionate feelings for Srimati Radharani may be understood, but on analysis, I find them contradictory. My eyes are fully satisfied when I look upon Srimati Radharani, but by looking upon me, she becomes even more advanced in satisfaction. So even though that element of the contradiction in the first place, so even then we take the position, yes, he's satisfied there, but she has even more. Right? He's pleasing the whole creation, but he's pleased by Radharani. And Radharani is more pleased than he is. Right? So you get... Yeah.
This is quite inconceivable. If she reflects his pleasure, how is that possible if she is, you know, like 10 million times happier than he is?
Because is Krishna pleased by serving the devotees? So therefore, then she being having that quality, then it's even more. Wasn't that discussed yesterday?
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, the technical points.
Koti.
Yeah, 10 million. Yes, Koti, 10 million. Yeah, because it's just because you have to remember is that he's pleasing the world. Let's say, you know, okay, he is the. Although my body lends fragrance to the entire creation, but how is it that it does? It's through his potencies, but she is those potencies. So he is those potencies in the position of existence, right? Does that make sense? Means he is those things. Means he's all the three positions, but the position of fragrance, that everything takes on his fragrance because of him, that's a generic quality. So it's not being manifest through the position of prema. But Radharani, being the potency that manifests that, but she's manifesting through the Haladini Shakti, this fragrance to please Krishna. It's being done as service. Because Krishna, he's the fragrance in everything, and we see it's so nice. But that's just the generic wonderfulness of Krishna's fragrance. So when that fragrance is then imbued with devotion, then that's where you get the increase of the greater increase. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is that's the difficulty. Knowledge and skills, the mechanics is very overrated. And that's what will create happiness. It's devotion, it's prema that creates the happiness. But at the same time, as we see, as it mentioned, the gopis are very expert. So they're expert in the knowledge and skills. But only in the context of service to Krishna. But the idea that the knowledge and skills themselves will generate any happiness, that doesn't actually, it's not valid. Because if it actually worked, wouldn't all the people who are expert in something in the world be quite satisfied? Really? That's the whole thing, they're not. So the difficulty comes is that it's only when there's devotion, because that's what generates ananda. When there's exchange based on relationship where you're trying to please the other one in pure devotion, that's what creates ananda. And you can only do that in connection with Krishna. Wait, does that make sense? Well, here the mechanics are used. We may direct them at other people to please other people so that we may be pleased. But we see there they're using these mechanics to create situations and results to please Krishna, just to please Krishna. They're not trying to become pleased. They're not trying to experience the pleasure of that themselves. Though they will experience, but it's not about that. Does that make sense? Well, that's the point of that aparoksha, is that you're not focusing on it, you're just experiencing it. Does that make sense? And that experience is greater, just like you're in the kirtan, and it's so wonderful. The happiness there is greater than when you stop and you start to tell someone how happy you are. That's the whole point.
Or you share the pictures.
Huh?
Or you share the pictures on internet.
Yes, yes. Or you stop to take the selfie or something. Try to adjust around so you get the kirtaneer and, you know. Like that. And, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Can we say that also devotion, love, bhakti, there is some knowledge and skill of love?
There's knowledge and skill in that. That's what whole nectar devotion is about. But the point is why is it being applied? To please Krishna. See, the point is the problem's not the knowledge and skills. The problem is that it's not being used to please Krishna. But we'll be thinking that the knowledge and skills, that's what pleases Krishna. No, it's not. It's pleasing Krishna pleases Krishna. Trying to please Krishna, that's what pleases Krishna. And then you do it as expertly as you can. Does that make sense? Thus, although I am the source of happiness for the entire world, the beauty and attributes of Sri Radhika are my life and soul. Right? Yeah, because we said the whole world is just through his Brahman portion that he's generating that. Right? In this way, my affectionate feelings for Srimati Radharani may be understood, but on analysis I find them contradictory. My eyes are fully satisfied when I looked upon Srimati Radharani, but by looking upon me, she becomes even more advanced in satisfaction. The flute-like murmur of the bamboos rubbing against one another steals Radharani's consciousness, for she thinks it to be the sound of my flute, and she embraces a tamal tree, mistaking it for me. Quote, I have gotten the embrace of Sri Krishna, she thinks, so now my life is fulfilled. End quote. Thus, she remains immersed in pleasing Krishna, taking the tree in her arms. When a favorable breeze carries to her the fragrance of my body, she is blinded by love and tries to fly into that breeze. When she tastes the betel chewed by me, she merges in an ocean of joy and forgets everything else. Even with hundreds of mouths, I could not express the transcendental pleasure she derives from my association. Seeing the luster of her complexion after our pastimes together, I forget my own identity in happiness. The sage Bharata has said that the mellows of lover and beloved are equal, but he does not know the mellows of my Vrindavan. The happiness I feel when meeting Radharani is 100 times greater than the happiness I get from meeting others. My dear auspicious Radharani, your body is the source of all beauty. Right? So, all the other gopis, he gets, what do you use here? Hundreds of times greater pleasure by being with Radharani. And she gets then so many more times that pleasure than Krishna's getting. So that's the whole idea why everybody serves. So even the Astasaki, Prema? Parma Preshta Shakis, then they also are just assisting Radha and Krishna. Though they have that aspect of directly interacting with Krishna because it adds flavor. Right? So when that aspect is will bring more flavor in the pastime, then they take that mood. And when it won't, then they'll take that mood, that the other moods. Does this make sense? So he's saying that Bharata then is saying about how the mellows between lover and beloved then equal between the two, but he's saying he doesn't know Vrindavan because there it's then so much greater between him and Radharani. Yes. Quote, my dear auspicious Radharani, your body is the source of all beauty. Your red lips are softer than the scents of immortal sweetness. Your face bears the aroma of a lotus flower. Your sweet words defeat the vibrations of the cuckoo. And your limbs are cooler than the pulp of sandalwood. All my transcendental senses are overwhelmed in ecstatic pleasure by tasting you, who are completely decorated by beautiful qualities. End quote. Footnote 57. This verse is spoken by Lord Krishna to Radha. Is recorded in the Lalita Madhava 9.9 of Srila Rupa Goswami. Then another quote here. Her eyes are enchanted by the beauty of Lord Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa. Her body thrills in pleasure at his touch. Her ears are always attracted to his sweet voice. Her nostrils are enchanted by his fragrance. And her tongue hankers for the nectar of his soft lips. She hangs down her lotus-like face, exercising self-control only by pretense. But she cannot help showing the external signs of her spontaneous love for Krishna. End quote. Considering this, I can understand that some unknown mellow in me, so Krishna is saying that, considering this, I can understand that some unknown mellow in me controls the entire existence of my captivator, Srimati Radharani. I am always eager to taste the joy that Radharani derives from me. In spite of various efforts, I have not been able to taste it. Right? So, in other words, she's tasting something so much greater than he's tasting. But it's still the source of that is him. Right? So he's still the source of all this. So he's trying to taste what is that in him that she is tasting. So that's then his, you know, the point that he's then discussing. In spite of various efforts, I have not been able to taste it, but my desire to relish that pleasure increases as I smell its sweetness. Formerly, I appeared in the world to taste mellows, and I tasted the mellows of pure love in various ways. I taught devotional service that springs from the devotee's spontaneous love by demonstrating it with my pastimes. But these three desires of mine were not satisfied, for one cannot enjoy them in a contrary position. Unless I accept the luster of the ecstatic love of Sri Radhika, these three desires cannot be fulfilled. Therefore, assuming Radharani's sentiments and bodily complexion, I shall descend to fulfill these three desires. Right, so the complexion comes because of the sentiments. Is that? Yeah. 231 to 268. In this way, Lord Krishna came to a decision. Simultaneously, the time came for the incarnation of the age. At that time, Sri Advaita was earnestly worshipping him. Advaita attracted him with his loud calls. First, Lord Krishna made his parents and elders appear. Then Krishna himself, with the sentiments and complexion of Radhika, appeared in Navadvipa like the full moon from the womb of Mother Sachi, which is like an ocean of pure milk. Meditating on the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami, I have thus explained the sixth verse. I can support the explanation of these two verses, verse 5 and 6, of the first chapter, with a verse by Sri Rupa Goswami. Quote, Lord Krishna desired to taste the limitless nectarian mellows of the love possessed by one of his multitude of loving damsels, Sri Radha, and so he has assumed the form of Lord Chaitanya. He has tasted that love while hiding his own dark complexion with her effulgent yellow color. May that Lord Chaitanya confer upon us his grace. Footnote 58. This is the third verse of the second Chaitanyastika of Srila Rupa Goswami's Stavamala. Thus, the auspicious invocation, the essential nature of the truth of Lord Chaitanya, and the need for his appearance have been set forth in six verses. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, I always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps, 269 to 277. Conclusion. Lord Chaitanya appeared for three principal reasons, three principal purposes of his own. The first purpose was to relish the position of Srimati Radharani, who is the prime reciprocator of transcendental love of Sri Krishna. The second reason for his appearance was to understand the transcendental mellow of himself. And the third reason was to enjoy the bliss tasted by Radharani. Lord Chaitanya appeared in order to fulfill these three confidential desires, and also to preach the special significance of chanting of the holy name, and to answer the call of Advaita Prabhu. These were secondary reasons. Right, but still, that's the whole point. Secondary connected to the primary is always wonderful. The transactions of Radha and Krishna are completely different from material lust. Therefore, the author is very clearly distinguished between them. Right, so therefore, he is Sat, he's Chit, he's Ananda. But within that element of Sat, what she is experiencing, and then within Chit, within Ananda, that's what he wants to experience. Right, within these positions. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Those blue like Krishna's. So then, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Study Guide 2, Part 2, Mangalacharan, Book 2, so many twos, Chapters 5 through 8. Okay. So, content. Chapter 5, The Glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. Introduction. Then commentary in verse 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and Krishnadas, Srila Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami's personal story. Chapter 6, The Glories of Sri Advaitacharya. Commentaries on verses 12 and 13. Chapter 7, Lord Chaitanya and Five Features. Commentary on verse 14. Lord Chaitanya converts the Mayavadi sannyasis of Varanasi. Lord Chaitanya disperses his troops. Is this Lord Chaitanya Five Features, is that different from TLC? Is that a different book?
This is just...
Because I remember there was a book before, a small book, called Chaitanya's Five Features. It's the printing of this chapter. Ah, that's fine.
Okay.
Chapter 8. Okay, so then he defeats the Mayavadis, and then he starts the Sankirtan mission. So that would be... Chapter 8. The author receives the orders of Krishna and Guru. The process of offenseless chanting, the glories of Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, and commentaries on verse 15 and 16. Okay, in the Mangalacharan, there's how many verses?
14.
So then, so 15 and 16 are beyond the Mangalacharan.
Yeah, it's the deities of Vrindavan. Okay. Some day approach, and okay. He expands on them before he goes into the...
Okay. Okay, so. Chapter 5, The Glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. Pratigya. Nityananda Prabhu is the original Sankarsana. Adhyaya Prakashika. The fifth chapter describes the truth of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is none other than Balaram, the son of Rohini. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 17:3-18. This chapter briefly is chiefly devoted to describing the essential nature and glories of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Lord Sri Krishna is the absolute personality of Godhead, and his first expansion in a form for pastimes is Sri Balaram. Beyond the limitation of this material world is the spiritual sky, Paravyoma, which has many spiritual planets, the supreme of which is called Krishna Loka. Krishna Loka, the abode of Krishna, has three divisions, which are known as Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokula. In that abode, the personality of Godhead expands himself in four plenary portions: Krishna, Balaram, Prajumna, the transcendental Cupid, and Aniruddha. They are known as the original quadruple forms. In Krishna Loka is a transcendental place known as Swetadvip, or Vrindavan. Below Krishna Loka in the spiritual sky are the Vaikuntha planets. On each Vaikuntha planet, a four-handed Narayana, expanded from the first quadruple manifestation, is present. The personality of Godhead, known as Sri Balarama, in Krishna Loka is the original Sankarsana, attracting deity. And from this Sankarsana expands another Sankarsana called Maha Sankarsana, who resides in one of the Vaikuntha planets. By his internal potency, Maha Sankarsana maintains the transcendental existence of all the planets in the spiritual sky, where all the living beings are eternally liberated souls. The influence of the material energy is conspicuous there by its absence. On those planets, the second quadruple manifestation is present. Outside of the Vaikuntha planets is the impersonal manifestation of Sri Krishna, which is known as Brahma Loka. So you have Krishna Loka, Vaikuntha Loka, and then Brahma Loka. On the other side of Brahma Loka is the spiritual Karana Samudra, or causal ocean. The material energy exists on the other side of the causal ocean, without touching it. In the causal ocean is Mahavishnu, the original Purusha expansion from Sankarsana. Mahavishnu places his glance over the material energy, and by a reflection of his transcendental body, he amalgamates himself within the material elements. As the source of the material elements, the material energy is known as Pradhan, and as the source of the manifestations of the material energy, it is known as Maya. But material nature is inert in that she has no independent power to do anything. She is empowered to make the cosmic manifestation by the glance of Mahavishnu. Therefore, the material energy is not the original cause of the material manifestation. Rather, the transcendental glance of Mahavishnu over material nature produces that cosmic manifestation. Mahavishnu again enters every universe as the reservoir of all living entities, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, right? Because they all sit within the lotus coming from his navel, right? From Garbhodakshay Vishnu expands Kiradakshay Vishnu, the supersoul of every living entity. Garbhodakshay Vishnu also has his own Vaikuntha planet in every universe, where he lives as the supersoul or supreme control of the universe. Garbhodakshay Vishnu reclines in the midst of the watery portion of the universe and generates the first living creature of the universe, Brahma. The imaginary universal form is a partial manifestation of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Right, that's the lotus. On the Vaikuntha planet, in every universe, is an ocean of milk. And within that ocean is an island called Swetadweep, where Lord Vishnu lives. Therefore, this chapter describes two Swetadweeps, one in the abode of Krishna and the other in the ocean of milk in every universe. The Swetadweep in the abode of Krishna is identical with Vrindavan Dham, which is the place where Krishna appears himself to display his loving pastimes. In the Swetadweep within every universe is a Sesha form of Godhead who serves Vishnu by assuming the form of his umbrella, slippers, couch, pillows, garments, residence, sacred thread, throne, and so on. Lord Baladev in Krishna Loka is Nityananda Prabhu. Therefore, Nityananda Prabhu is the original Sankarsana. And Mahasankarsana and his expansions as the Purushas in the universes are plenary expansions of Nityananda Prabhu. In this chapter, the author has described the history of his leaving home for a personal pilgrimage to Vrindavan and is achieving all success there. In this description, it is revealed that the author's original paternal home and birthplace were in the district of Katwa, in the village of Jamatpur, which is near Naihati. Krishnas Karvaraj's brother invited Sri Meena Ketana Ramdas, a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, to his home. But a priest named Gunaranava Mishra did not receive him well, and Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami's brother, not recognizing the glories of Lord Nityananda, also took sides with the priest. Therefore, Ramdas became sorry, broke his flute, and went away. This was a great disaster for the brother of Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami. But on that very night, Lord Nityananda Prabhu himself graced Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami in a dream and ordered him to leave on the next day for Vrindavan. Right, so then whatever is going to happen in the family, then he doesn't have to worry about it. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 through 6, introduction, verses 7 to 12, commentary on verse 7, 13 to 48, commentary in verse 8, 49 to 91, commentary in verse 9, 92 to 107, commentary in verse 10, 108 to 157, commentary on verse 11, 158 to 235, Krila Krishnas Kaviraj, this is his personal story. Verses 1 to 6, introduction. Let me offer my obeisances to Lord Nityananda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose opulence is wonderful and unlimited. By his will, even a fool can understand his identity. Right, so we saw before is that the fools can't understand Krishna, but by Lord Nityananda's grace, the fools can get his, you know, an understanding of him, getting his mercy, then they can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So everybody has a chance, yes, that's the hope. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glories to Advaitacharya, and all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have described the glory of Sri Krishna Chaitanya in 6 verses. Now in 5 verses I shall describe the glory of Lord Nityananda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the fountainhead of all incarnations. Lord Balaram is his second body. Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, is the primeval Lord, the original form of Godhead, and his first expansion is Sri Balarama. The personality of Godhead can expand himself in innumerable forms. The forms that have unlimited potency are called Swamsa, and forms that have limited potency, the living entities, are called Vibhinamsa. So, verse 5. These two are one and the same identity. They differ only in form. Lord Balaram is the first bodily expansion of Krishna, and he assists in Lord Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Srila Prabhupada. Balarama is a Swamsa expansion of the Lord, and therefore there is no difference in potency between Krishna and Balarama. The only difference is in their bodily structure. As the first expansion of Godhead, Balarama is the chief deity among the first quadruple forms, and he is the foremost assistant of Sri Krishna in his transcendental activities. So whatever activities Krishna does, then he's always there assisting. Text 6. That original Lord Krishna appeared in Navadvip as Lord Chaitanya, and Balarama appeared with him as Lord Nityananda. Verses 7 to 12. Commentary on verse 7. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarsana, Sesha Naga, and the Vishnus who lie in the causal ocean, Garbha ocean, and ocean of milk are his plenary portions, and the portions of his plenary portions. Verse 7 of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It happens to just come as verse 7 here, I think. Lord Balarama is the original Sankarsana. He assumes 5 other forms to serve Lord Krishna. He himself helps in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. He does the work of creation in 4 other forms. He executes the order of Lord Krishna in the work of creation, and in the form of Lord Sesha, he serves Krishna in various ways. Does that make sense? So means he Lord Balaram assists in Krishna's pastimes, and he expands to the Chakta Vyuha, which takes care of everything else in the cosmos. And as Lord Sesha, then he assists in also various ways. So Balaram then takes the positions of the activities, you know, and the relationships and all the different activities there, and Sesha then takes all the forms of those things that then assist in those pastimes, the paraphernalia. Does that make sense? Yeah, so in other words, we see is that we aspect of the Kriya and the Jnana. So then in this, then Balaram himself is taking care of the Kriya. And then in this form is the end, as Sesha, then he takes the paraphernalia. But we don't see him, let's say, in Vrindavan. When you come out, then you start to see him. Then Vishnu sits on the Nanta Sesh and like this. But, no?
We don't see him in Vrindavan.
Do you see Seshnaga in Vrindavan? Is he part of the pastime?
Not really.
No, because Balaram is doing that himself. But the paraphernalia, his bed, his, you know, all the different paraphernalia, that's all Sesha.
So he expands and then he withdraws into himself back.
Means he is expanding that aspect. Means those paraphernalia. But the point is in Braj, you don't see the aspects of majesty where everything is clearly expanded and everybody has their position and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, does that make sense? Like Advaitacharya, you see in the Navadvip Leela, but you don't really see him in the Vrindavan Leela. You know? But he's there in the back, because otherwise, how is all that taken care of? Does that make sense? Yeah.
What is the relation between Balaram and the three Vishnus?
Balaram and the three Vishnus. Means Balaram expands as Maha Sankarsana, who expands then as the Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, Garbha Dakshaya, and but, and then the last of that is Sesha. That's why he's called Sesha, means the end.
Is Maha Sankarsana and Mua Sankarsana the same thing?
I would expect that they are the same. But you also have the aspect, see, just what you're having here is that all expansions other than Krishna and Braja are all technically expanding from the expansions of Balaram. Mm. But because it's Krishna's expanded, then it's Krishna who's doing that. So Krishna knows. But at the same time, as the attention of that and taking care of that is done by Balaram. And then Balaram, he's assisting Krishna and Braj, so he takes care of all that as Mahasankarshan. So that Mahasankarshan, Mahanarayan, Mula Sankarshan, that would, I would expect, would all be the same. But at the same time, they may be bringing out different aspects that's there. Because you have Mahanarayan, then he expands as the Chakravyuha. Mm-hmm. Right? But the point is that Mahanarayan is still Balaram. He's still Sankarshan. Mm-hmm. So even you have Krishna and Balaram in Dwarka, is still expanding from Balaram. Right? But Vasudev takes that mood, has the mood of Krishna, and then Sankarsana takes that mood of Balaram. Right? It's just that in the pastime, then they are manifesting the qualities to please the devotees involved in that pastime in Dwarka. So Krishna and Balaram, they're the ones expanding. That technically Balaram's taking care of all that. Mm-hmm. But it's happening because of Krishna's desire. You understand? So since Balaram's expanding and all that, but it's still Krishna's desire, you can still tell the difference between Krishna and Balaram.
By the moon.
Yes, by the moon. Okay. So there, yeah.
The second expansion of Chakravyuha comes from Sankarshan.
Means Prajumna.
So there's the first Chaturvyuha, Vasudeva Sankarshan Prajumna.
Then from Sankarshan, then they expand
another,
again.
Right.
Mahanarayan.
Yes. You have Mahanarayan, then from the Chaturvyuha, then you see as one goes through Vaikuntha, and one expansion goes then through the Purusha avatars. Both coming from that Mahasankarshan.
Okay.
Like that. So Sankarshan does all that expanding. But at the same time, Vasudev is why it's being expanded, so that Krishna can perform his pastimes. So it's being the Sankarshan's doing all the arrangements. But it's about Vasudev and his pastimes. So even if you have all the different forms, there's always going to be, you know, that secondary form, there's always going to be Ananta there. Right? So even if you have in the Chaturvyuha have your Sankarshan, but still there's the aspect of that he's performing his pastimes and then Sesha is there to assist.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always going to have that aspect of Krishna and Balaram. Does that work? Srila Prabhupada, according to expert opinion, Balaram, as the chief of the original quadruple forms, is also the original Sankarsana. Balarama, the first expansion of Krishna, expands himself in five forms. 1. Mahasankarsan. 2. Karanabdishayi. 3. Garbhodashayi. 4. Kirodakashayi. And 5. Sesha. Right? So that's the end of the line. That's why it's called Sesha. These five plenary portions are responsible for both the spiritual and material cosmic manifestations. Right? Because from Mahasankarshan, then he's expanding into Karanabdishayi, but at the same time he goes the other way, then you get to 24 Vishnus. Right? Like that. These five forms of Lord Balaram assist the Lord Krishna in his activities. The first four of these forms are responsible for the cosmic manifestations. Whereas Sesha is responsible for personal service to the Lord. Sesha is called Ananta, or unlimited, because he assists the personality of Godhead in his unlimited expansions by performing an unlimited variety of services. Sri Balaram is the servitor Godhead who serves Lord Krishna in all affairs of existence and knowledge. But you got that? That's why that overlap is there. Because in all affairs of existence and knowledge, because he personally takes care of the knowledge, but the existence, that's where he expands. That's where Maha Sankarshan, right? Or then he's expansion as Advaita Acharya. Right? Does that make sense? It means Karana Dakshai Vishnu, Advaita Acharya.
Yeah. Because sometimes it is said that Krishna is the Lord of Ichan and Balaram is the Lord of
Jnana. I mean, it means the, excuse me. But here, in knowledge would be the Samvit aspect, or Kriya.
Yeah.
Because here we use existence. So you know here, existence means that what we're talking about in that form is Jnana. Because that's the knowledge of the existence of things, that they exist there, you know, and how they work. That's not the knowledge of the activities. So here we're taking, knowledge means connected to the senses and to activities. So that's the thing, that's why the different formulas, sometimes the words move around, but you know the position, then you know what they do. But because a different word is used, there's some different flavor that's being brought out. It'd be like synonyms. They mean the same thing, but the context is different because they're bringing out some other aspect. Does that make sense? So Balaram's taking care of those two. So you see is that he always takes care, but then through his expansions, then that the third aspect, the existence part, is taken care of. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the existence of things, so therefore in Goloka, that will be Mahanarayan or Mahasankarshan. But he'll be the Lord in that case of the Ichakriya Jnana, that'll be him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that's the expansion you see come down here, then there's Yavatar, then that's Advaita Acharya. So then you see Icha, Kriya, and Jnana being represented there. That's why there's the three Prabhus. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That third aspect you don't really see in Vrindavan. You see the energy in Vrindavan, but you don't see the Purusha in Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? In all the forms, he tastes the transcendental. Any of this makes any sense?
Quite that. Quite that.
Okay. In all the forms, he tastes the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. That same Balarama is Lord Nityananda, the companion of Lord Gaurasundara. I have explained the seventh verse in four subsequent verses. By these verses, all the world could know the truth about Lord Nityananda. That's why you generally see when there's verses about Lord Nityananda, it most of the time explains all these five expansions in one verse. Well, generally with Krishna, you don't get all the expansions in one verse. You know, they're talking about Krishna in Braj, or, you know, the Lord of Vaikuntha, or as the Purusha of it, like this. They'll talk about him in that way. But when they talk about Balaram or Lord Nityananda, you'll generally see they mention the whole line. Mm-hmm. Verses 13 to 48. Commentary on verse 8. I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, who is known as Sankarsana in the midst of the Chakra Vyuha, consisting of Vasudev, Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. He possesses full opulences and resides in Vaikuntha Loka, far beyond the material creation. Verse 8 of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Beyond the material nature lies the realm known as Paravyoma, the spiritual sky. Like Lord Krishna himself, it possesses all transcendental attributes, such as the six opulences. Srila Prabhupada. According to Shankya philosophy, the material cosmos is composed of 24 elements. The five gross material elements, the three subtle material elements, the five knowledge-acquiring senses, the five active senses, the five objects of sense pleasure, and the Mahatattva, the total material energy. Empiric philosophers, unable to go beyond these elements, speculate that anything beyond them must be avyakta, or inexplicable. Right? So they have to use that inexplicable. But at the same time, is they'll try to explain it. And if you discuss with that, and they can't, then they'll throw into it, yes. But that's the whole point, is if it's inexplicable, means it's beyond their concept. Right, yeah. But the world beyond the 24 elements is not inexplicable, for it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita as the eternal, sanatana, nature. Beyond the manifested and unmanifested existence of material nature, vyakta vyakta, is the sanatana nature, which is called the paravyoma, or the spiritual sky. Right, manifest and unmanifested nature, because the mahatattva, we see, it manifests, it goes unmanifest. It manifests, it's unmanifest. Right? So makes sense. Yes.
The difference between the word inconceivable and inexplicable. We use the word inconceivable oneness and difference.
Inconceivable means you can't conceive of it. Inexplicable means you can't explain it. Does that work? Yeah. Technically that's against the rules to explain it like that, but it works. Because you're supposed to use a word other than the one that it's based on. But because you go back to its root, then he knows the word. So it worked. Since the nature is spiritual in quality, there are no qualitative differences there. Everything there is spiritual, everything is good, and everything possesses the spiritual form of Sri Krishna itself. That spiritual sky is the manifested internal potency of Sri Krishna. It is distinct from the material sky, manifested by his external potency. Right. It's interesting here is that the 24th element here is the Mahatattva. Right? So that's generally how it's always said. Sometimes they call it Pradhan. Or just the total material, like you said, the total material energy. But also, we've seen in some places, depending on how it's being explained, what you're trying to bring out, it'll talk polluted consciousness. Right? Because another name for the Mahatattva is Sutra. Right? Means that polluted consciousness, the idea of the living entity control and enjoy the material energy. So that way, this point, that can be any of these, depending on what you're trying to bring out. Right? The others are pretty straightforward. Right, but this aspect of Mahatattva has various features. Yes.
Like in Mode of Goodness, it's called Mahatattva, Passion, Sutra, and Ignorance, Ahankar.
Uh-huh. And
these are the three aspects.
Of the Mahatattva. Okay.
And the passion is the creation, so the jiva enters, that's where the sutra is related to.
Okay. That's why it's related to that. And the Ahankar means... The Ahankar means before, or means the manifestation of the three? Means it's the avidya, or it means the three forms? I guess because you're saying goodness, passion, ignorance, it has to mean the avidya before that. So that means that avidya is coming from that, from there. That's where it resides. So then when it says the jiva looks across to the other side, it means he's looking across to there. Better to keep yourself busy. Nothing to do. Look across the Viraja, what's on the other side. Yeah. Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. The disease of the modern civilized man is his disbelief of everything in the revealed scriptures. Says the disease of the modern civilized man, right? Because if I say modern civilized man, yeah, that's me, yeah, but then this is the disease. Okay. Faithless non-believers cannot make progress in spiritual realization, for they cannot understand the spiritual potency. The small fruit of a banyan tree contains hundreds of seeds. And in each, right, because you've seen those little red fruits, and in those is hundreds of seeds. So how small is a banyan seed? So that's why that example is given. It's the smallest of seeds, right? You know, grass seed's bigger than that, right? You know, that. But it makes the biggest plant that there is. And in each seed is the potency to produce another banyan tree, with the potency to produce millions more of such fruits. This law of nature is visible before us, although how it works is beyond our understanding. This is but an insignificant example of the potency of Godhead. There are many similar phenomena that no scientist can explain. So why that goes, they'll say chance. So it's like, right, because if everything's by chance, that means there is no laws. And if there's no laws, they have no science. And if there's no science, they don't have any position. And not only do they not have a position, they don't have a job. And not only that, they don't eat. And so then they would starve to death. So it's only by the Lord's grace, there's laws of nature, and that's why they can maintain themselves. Right? Otherwise, by that, their feature of survival of the fittest, they would be the first to die. Right? They would end up in the soup, right? It means literally, right?
More annoying is to say that their degree is by chance.
Their degree is by chance, yes. Just by chance. Yeah. That would be interesting. Have you ever tried that on one of them? That would be fun, just to see the... Yeah. Yeah. Everything, in fact, is inconceivable. So you see is that it's not a thing against the scientists as that. It's just that it's so foolish. The Prabhupada just points it out. It's quite playful. It's just, they don't, but it's serious at the same time. But it's not a matter of justice. It's not that they're wrong and therefore, no, it's just a matter of their position won't work. But at the same time is, if they surrender to Lord Nityananda, as in here, then they can understand, then appreciating Lord Chaitanya, then they can advance. Right? So why bring up the scientists here? Because only by the grace of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, then there's any chance. Everything, in fact, is inconceivable, for the truth is revealed only to the proper persons. Although there are varieties of personalities, from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, all of whom are living beings, their development of knowledge is different. Therefore, we have to gather knowledge from the right source. Indeed, in reality, we can get knowledge only from the Vedic sources. The four Vedas, with their supplementary Puranas, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, and their corollaries, which are known as Smritis, are all authorized sources of knowledge. If we are at all to gather knowledge, we must gather it from these sources without hesitation. Because other things, it'll be speculative. So the difficulty comes up is that people will sit and observe, but how long until they get something? It's just like now, there's certain things that in the modern academy are just developing now. But the modern academy is literally 1,000 years old. So things have been developing for so long, you know. And that, you know, wheel's always been there, and just now they're figuring out certain things they can do with it. You know, they came up with the rubber, then the air, and then they're, you know, like this. And that's been around for a long time. I mean, really long time. And only now they're figuring it out, well, you don't actually have to pump it up with air. You just have to have the rubber that so that there's air, like, you know, holes in it. And if you make it firm enough, you don't need air in the tire. You just need the holes that have air in them. And that way, you know what I'm saying? So it just takes so long for them to develop things. Like that. So the point is, and that's just they're figuring out a few things here that make it work better. Right? You know, so, yeah. So then the principle comes up is that how will they know what's beyond? You know, which is actually inconceivable. So that you have to approach the Vedic literatures, because the Vedic literatures, they describe what is beyond. Right? And in so doing, describe what's here. That's how you know how things here work. There has to be a purpose. If I come along and see a machine in the middle of the room, there's a reason that that's there. It's a reason it's been made. Just to say it happened by chance, then you wouldn't say that's a very scientific answer. But that is the scientific answer by the modern academy. So, yes, yeah, so it won't know unless they hear from authority, someone who knows why that's there. Hearing from them, so that's the Vedic literature.
Okay? If a modern scientist, they connect with the right source, they can be a real scientist.
Yes, of course. If they're studying the creation based on his connection with Krishna, then that makes it there. If you look back in history, the most prominent ones generally are those who are theistic and understand it in that context. though they don't have much information.
Yes.
And the ones that are against that, then generally, you know, they may come up, they may not, and give it time. Who knows? They'll go. You know, Einstein. It means you still hear about Newton. Hear about, you know, these, they're theists. You still hear about them, but give it a few years. In 20 years, will anyone know the man in the wheelchair? You know, like that. It's just that, will they still know, or will he just be another name? There's tons of names in physics. You know, but will he still be one that people know or care about? You know? So that's the whole thing, is that it means they could easily be real scientists by twice in a day. Yeah, they don't seem to have the bells on.
Some scientists?
Yeah, they're doing some experiments. So the whole point is that Shankya, who's following Shankya, that's science. Then it's just a matter of whether it's theistic, following the son of Devahuti, or atheistic, following the atheist. It's just a matter of which way you want to use it. You analyze the creation, you can do, but do you want to find out why it's there, what it's for, what's beyond? Rather than you analyze it just to get out, but why would you need to get out? Who are you? Why would getting out be a benefit? You know, there must be, you know, why would you come to that conclusion? Where is there any evidence that this is, has anybody gotten out? You know? Has anyone gotten out and lived to tell the tale? Right? You know, so how do you know? But we have those who come from the other side, and they can say what actually getting out means. Right? Because otherwise, jumping on a trampoline and going up, and you have that moment when you just hang in space. That's not exactly away from the trampoline. Right? Yes. Revealed knowledge may be in the beginning. Revealed knowledge may in the beginning be unbelievable because of our paradoxical desire to verify everything with our tiny brains. But before he just mentioned, now he's getting a little bit more pointed. But the speculative means of attaining knowledge is always imperfect, right? Because we always said it's inconceivable. So the perfect knowledge propounded in the revealed scriptures is confirmed by the great acharyas, who have left ample commentations upon them. None of these acharyas has disbelieved in the shastras. One who disbelieves in the shastras is an atheist. And we should not consult an atheist, however great he may be. A staunch believer in the shastras, with all their diversities, is the right person from whom to gather real knowledge. Such knowledge may seem inconceivable in the beginning, but when we put forward by the proper authority, its meaning is revealed, and then one no longer has any doubts about it. So when there's that mood of devotion, that mood of surrender, then Krishna reveals himself, because being transcendental, he's beyond our intelligence, so we can't. There's no access. But when we surrender, then the chit potency, then we have that connection. So we can still use that medium of intelligence, but it's not by intelligence we understand. But having understood, you'll see it's not illogical. But it's not through logic you can understand. Right? So it says.
No, you can understand only by devotee.
You can only understand by the devotee. Because you're dealing with devotion. So devotion can only be understood from devotion. It can't be understood outside of that. You know, it's just like, let's say, you want to know, let us say you have some remote community, right? Mm-hmm. Now, an academic decides to do some work concerning that, they'll go there, they'll spend some time, they'll ask questions, they'll talk to people, they'll refer to this and that, they'll take a bunch of pictures, they'll come back, they'll write their thesis. Now they're the world authorities on that village, more than the people in the village. This is the fun part. How that works, I have no idea, but, you know, that's the way it rolls. So, but the thing is they never really know how to ask the right questions, because they'll only ask the questions in the context of their social understanding. And so they'll never actually understand. So they'll ask questions and they'll decide, oh, they don't understand this, or they're backwards, or they're this or that. Though they don't understand, they may have a much more complex understanding of things. You know? So that you always have that difficulty. So someone from that community can explain it because they're from there. And people from someone else, they don't really have the entrance into it. Right? Unless they have the right attitude. Right? So that's the way, is that we can have an understanding into the spiritual realm by hearing from those from there. Right? They make the commentaries on the scriptures. The scriptures are given by Krishna, and then they make the commentaries to make it work for us. Okay, next verse. That Vaikuntha region is all-pervading, infinite, and supreme. It is the residence of Lord Krishna and his incarnations. In the highest, so the Vaikuntha region, that means the whole thing. Right? The Paravyoma is Vaikuntha because it's free from kunta, free from anxiety. Right? The highest region of that spiritual sky is the spiritual planet called Krishna Loka. It has three divisions, Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokula. Sri Gokula, the highest of all, is also called Braj, Gokula, Swetadweep, and Vrindavan. Right? So you know that it has all these names. Goloka. So you can say Goloka Vrindavan, and you mean Braj. Right? But sometimes we see is that they also describe Goloka meaning Krishna Loka, and then Gokula specifically means Braj. So it just depends upon how it's being discussed. So when Prabhupada is saying Goloka Vrindavan, he means Braj. But others, sometimes he says Braj specifically. Like the transcendental body of Lord Krishna, Gokula is all-pervading, infinite, and supreme. It expands both above and below without any restriction. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Jiva Goswami, the great authority and philosopher in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has discussed the abode of Krishna in his Krishna Sandarbha. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord refers to, quote-unquote, my abode. Srila Jiva Goswami, examining the nature of Krishna's abode, refers to the Skanda Purana, which states, quote, the abodes of Godhead in the material world, such as Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokula, are facsimiles representing the abodes of Godhead in the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha Dham. The unlimited spiritual atmosphere of that Vaikuntha Dham is far above and beyond the material cosmos. From the authoritative evidence cited by Jiva Goswami, we may conclude that Krishna Loka is the supreme planet in the spiritual sky, which is far beyond the material cosmos. For the enjoyment of transcendental variety, the pastimes of Krishna there have three divisions, and those pastimes are performed in the three abodes, Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokula. When Krishna descends to this universe, he enjoys the pastimes in places of the same name. That's why you call it, here it's also called Gokula. Right? These places on earth are not different from those original abodes, for they are facsimiles of those original holy places in the transcendental world. So they are unlimited in that, but we with our senses can only appreciate a certain amount.
Yes.
Right, yeah. They are as good as Sri Krishna himself and are equally worshipable. Lord Chaitanya declared that Lord Krishna, who presents himself as the son of the king of Braja, is worshipable, and that Vrindavan Dham is equally worshipable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is it the reason why to live in this holy place is quite recommended?
It's recommended because you're in the spiritual world. So it's like, let's say, one's in, somewhere else. You're in the temple. So you're in the spiritual world. But as soon as you step one side foot out of the door, you're in the material world. Though within the heart you may be remembering Krishna, so in that way then you're always in spiritually situated, the environment around you is not.
Yes.
But here in the Dham, whether you're in the temple or out on the road, it's still the same transcendental place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But in the temple, then Krishna's there, and then you can interact, it's the devotees, everything's mm-hmm. happening there. But the Dham is the same. That's the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you see is that wherever the deities are, wherever there's devotees are, wherever there's that, it's as good as Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But at the same time, as we see, the Dham has that effect. Has a thousand times more the potency of performing the activity anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So, when you say, you know, when Prabhupada's talking about Melbourne is Vrindavan,
mm-hmm.
because Radha and Krishna are there. It is Vrindavan, but you do the service there, you get the effect of that service. But that same service rendered here, you get a thousand times. So you have to understand, there still is a difference. It's the same, but different. But here and this spiritual world, it's just one's higher, one's lower. They're the same place. So, text 19. That abode is manifested within the material world by the will of Lord Krishna, right? So it's by his Icha Shakti. It is identical to that original Gokula. They are not two different bodies. They are one, right? Srila Prabhupada. The above mentioned dhammas are movable, but the omnipotent will of Lord Krishna, by the omnipotent will of Lord Krishna. When Sri Krishna appears on the face of the earth, he can also make his dhammas appear, without changing the original structure. One should not discriminate between the dhammas on the earth and those in the spiritual sky, thinking those on earth to be material and the original abodes to be spiritual, right? That's the problem that comes up. We try to understand the position of the living entity, how he becomes contaminated, how he becomes materialistic, because we'll make a distinction between these. Does that make sense? Yeah. All of them are spiritual. Only for us, who cannot experience anything beyond matter in our present conditioned state, do the Dhammas and the Lord himself in his arch of form appear before us resembling matter to give us the facility to see spirit with material eyes. Right? So, because we're contaminated in that way by the materialistic, then Krishna, then through the deity, through the Dham, then they manifest in a way that we can appreciate. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the beginning, and that's also the what do you call it? Tatastha Shakti. It brings these two together so they can be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sense, yeah. In the beginning, this may be difficult for a neophyte to understand. But in due course, when one is advanced in devotional service, it will be easier. And he will appreciate the Lord's presence in these tangible forms. Right? So by the Lord's grace, then it becomes revealed, then that's how it means it becomes easy. Because when you get Krishna's mercy, mercy of the Vaishnavas, then things become easy. Text 20. The land there is touch-tone, Chintamani, and the forests abound with desire trees. Material eyes see it as an ordinary place. Srila Prabhupada. By the grace of the Lord, his dhammas, and he himself can be present simultaneously, without losing their original importance. Ah. So it's only when it's the original text and then the commentaries, then we don't need what we were discussing this morning. It's when you have a commentary, and in a commentary we put another Acharya's commentary. That's what we're talking about.
Mm.
So, yeah. By the grace of the Lord, his dhammas and he himself can all be present simultaneously, without losing their original importance. Only when one fully develops an affection and love of Godhead can one see those dhammas in their original appearance. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, a great acharya in the preceptoral line of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has said for our benefit that one can perfectly see the dhammas only when one completely gives up the mentality of lording it over material nature. One's spiritual vision develops proportionally to one's giving up the debased mentality of unnecessarily enjoying matter. Right, so as we give up the desire for enjoying matter, to that degree we can appreciate the spiritual. Right, because if otherwise we're engaged in matter, that means the senses can simply perceive matter, because that's our goal. But as we give up the desire to enjoy matter, right, the more we give that up, then the more we're able to, the senses therefore can by the Lord's grace, experience the transcendental. A diseased person who has become diseased because of a certain bad habit must be ready to follow the advice of the physician, and as a natural sequence, he must attempt to give up the cause of the disease. Mm-hmm. The patient cannot indulge in the bad habit and at the same time expect to be cured by the physician. Right, because if you put it in this simple thing, then it brings it into a nice context. Otherwise, because for us, many things are, you know, culturally from our backgrounds, are normal things. So a thing that's a restriction, but you're being restricted from what causes the disease. You know what I'm saying? Like little kids, if you don't get, they go out and play in the garbage and they'll get sick. So restricting them from playing in the garbage, how is that such a restriction? Now for a kid, he loves to do whatever he likes, and why you're restricting and, you know, all these kind of things. But, you know, that's the way it works. Modern materialistic civilization, however, is maintaining a diseased atmosphere. The living being is a spiritual spark, as spiritual as the Lord himself. The only difference is that the Lord is great and the living entity is small. Qualitatively, they are one, but quantitatively, they are different. Therefore, since the living being is spiritual in constitution, he can be happy only in the spiritual sky, where there are unlimited spiritual spheres called Vaikunthas. A spiritual being conditioned by a material body must therefore try to get rid of his disease instead of developing the cause of the disease. Right, the cause is to try to separate oneself from the connection with the Lord. So as you try to establish that connection, the disease goes down. We start to, our natural position as the soul starts to awaken and come up, and then we're able to appreciate that common ground. Right? Otherwise, we're taking the body, which is material, and the material energy, which is material, and then the interaction of the senses of the body with the sense objects, and then we're taking that as the basis of our existence. But it doesn't address us, ourselves, the soul. Right? So when we see that, then we start to see the soul connected to the Supreme Soul. Then that relationship, then that's where the interaction and the senses are engaged. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the senses are engaged, it's just a matter of the consciousness. Next verse. But with the eyes of love of Godhead, one can see its real identity as the place where Lord Krishna performs his pastimes with the cowherd boys and cowherd girls. Quote, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending cows, yielding all desires in abodes built with spiritual gems, and surrounded by millions of purpose trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Footnote 1. Oh, it's for the chapter.
No, that's second verse.
That's the first verse. No, it means, so by book, the numbers go up.
Yes,
oh, okay.
By book, right.
Okay. I was going to say, because we were right up there, and now we're back to one.
Right.
Okay. This is a verse from the Brahma Samhita, 5:29. Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, states that in Vaikuntha Loka, the material modes of nature, represented by the qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance, have no influence. In the material world, the highest qualitative manifestation is goodness. which is characterized by truthfulness, mental equilibrium, cleanliness, control of the senses, simplicity, essential knowledge, faith in God, scientific knowledge, and so on. Nevertheless, all these qualities are mixed with passion and imperfection. But the qualities in Vaikuntha are a manifestation of God's internal potency, and therefore they are purely spiritual and transcendental, with no trace of material infection. No material planet, even Satyaloka, is comparable in quality to the spiritual planets, or the five inherent qualities of the material world, namely ignorance, misery, egoism, anger, and envy, are completely absent. Okay. Ignorance, misery, egoism, anger, and envy. Basically, like that list sums up the whole thing. Right? that's so far.
This aspect of the spiritual abode, does it reflect the Brahman aspect of the spiritual world?
Means that where? It means Vaikuntha. Means it's existing. Its existence is there. Means Bhaktivinoda, of course, explaining you have the Icha, Kriya, and Jnana Shaktis. So Icha is Krishna's desire. So that manifests then the Lord, means all of his paraphernalia, the devotees, the Dham, you know, the pastimes, all these different things are manifest from there because it's his desire, so they dance. Then, and he controls that. Kriya Shakti, then that will be controlled by Balaram. So that will expand, you'll see all the different, all the Vaikunthas and everything like that. It'll also expand all the, you know, it'll basically the same things will be mentioned. But what's the difference? One is the mood, the attitude in which they have. The other is that the activities that they have. And then the jnana is the existence of things, the knowledge of things, what things are, how they relate to each other. So in other words, the knowledge that's required to apply it in Kriya to get the results of pleasing Krishna in Egypt. So all three are there. But the point is it's that this form of Brahman, that's only you find within the material world. Right? Means that the Lord's the Krishna's effulgent pervades everything, but at the same time is that concept of Brahman. You don't have to have that separate. We only use it here so that we can see the differences, so that we can see the levels. You know, it's like Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. We only make the distinctions here. Otherwise, there you don't make any distinction. You know, does that make sense? You're not making a distinction that the gopis are expanding from Ladini. And Mother Jashoda and her crew is expanding from Samvit. Nobody makes that. You don't do that. You know, just like the Jivas are expanding from the Tathasta. You don't have to do that. Does that make sense? Because it's all in its natural, perfect position in serving Krishna. So here we only do that so that we understand the difference. Because if we can't discriminate, we can't actually tell what's devotional and what's not. So we're defining those things. But at the same time, it's there. It's truth. It's the knowledge. But that knowledge is not required to function in the spiritual world. Right? There it's that love for Krishna. You follow that. That's how you function. You know, it's just like when you're hungry. You just follow your hunger until you get to some place where there's something to eat. Right?
The Bhagavad Sandarbha, once the definitions of Bhagavan, Brahman, and the qualifications are done, the first aspect which Srila Goswami establishes is the spiritual world is a Vishuddha Sattva category, beyond.
Yes.
So based establishing that position, then it takes forward that everybody who is in spiritual world, Lord's form, is in spiritual, everything is beyond.
Yes. It's all beyond. So the point is it's not that Krishna's not pervading everything by that. It's just that no one perceives that. It's only perceived here. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like water is an element that's all here. You know, it's everywhere, but it's like this, whatever it does. But then when you're inside a pool of water, that's when you notice the water. You know, and so by pointing out the water and how then, you know, the the living entity by nature is from beyond that water, then, you know, so therefore you have to follow the authorized methods how to get out of that water. Does that make sense? So the analyzation is basically for here. Otherwise, we do see there's analyzation in rasa and that. They have knowledge. They do all these things. It's not that they don't know these things. But it's not, the knowledge is not separate than Krishna. It's not that you know the knowledge and that's the interest. And then you can think, oh, I can use this for Krishna. It's because they want to serve Krishna. Therefore, they have that knowledge in which way to, how to do it. Does that make sense? So it's backwards from here. So we're starting from what we know, the external, and then taking that and showing step by step how that connects to Krishna. But once one gets beyond the material existence, then that knowledge is not needed to interact with Krishna. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're showing the commonality, because the tendency is that we're thinking that, okay, this knowledge is the, you know, we're learning all that, but that's all the jnana and all that. Then there's something beyond. No, it's the same. Or the activities that we're doing here, these aren't the thing. The real activities is something else. Right? But the whole point is that's not how it's working. It's just, the shaktis are the same, how it's working. But the point is it's all connected to Krishna's Bhagavan feature. While here, we're using this knowledge and skills in connection with the Brahman and Paramatma feature. So it's incomplete. So when we understand it connected to Bhagavan, then it becomes complete. So, Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki